You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have with me for one full segment this week, Michael Oliver. He is the author of Momentum and Structural Analysis. You need to go to olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com. Thanks for joining me, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
Good to have you with me, as always. And well, I just wonder about this equity market. We just talked to my friend Chen Lin. He says he's very optimistic. All this money sloshing around. He doesn't see, at least in the near term, any likelihood that the equity market's in trouble. What are you seeing in terms of your indicators, momentum and structural stuff that you look at?
When we look at the stock market, normally in the past, we focused on the S&P 500 as a broad, you know, multi-sectored index. And quite often, it was a good metric, okay, to look at. But starting last summer, when the upside really got hot, the index that became the leader, and actually in weighting the leading components within the NASDAQ 100, four or five of them constitute 50% of the entire index of 100 stocks. And a handful of those also now represent a huge percent of the S&P 500. So actually, the movement in those indexes has largely been weighted by a very narrow list of big-name stocks that we all know, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, etc. And therefore, our focus has gone totally now toward NASDAQ 100 and those three symbols. And we argue and we hold that we'll probably be right on this. If those symbols break down, you can forget all your other delusions about other sectors and so forth. They will take the market with it, because they are the gravitas of the market right now. And we see vulnerability. Now, when we start to see vulnerability in a trend, a turn, in other words, we don't just say, oh, it's over, sell it. No, we look for structures. We look for things that break, momentum things. Price is secondary. And that's not occurred yet. So you have to agree with Chen. Everything's positive right now. But we are getting some signs of momentum overbought readings on monthly action of the S&P and the NASDAQ. We needed this rally early this month. We argued that last in our weekend report that said, yes, though things look like they're trying to begin to top with trigger numbers below, we need to have a sharp rally early in the month for certain reasons. We explained why. We got the rally. Okay. Now, if we start to see arm wrestling type action over the over this month, you know, up, down, where you sort of net out nothing, watch out. Because when you get into March, a lot of our trigger numbers are going to be very high, meaning close to the market. And if we start to topple them, I think you could get a transition to the downside again. And I suspect that the opposite of that will be occurring in the T-bond market, and that will also add impetus to the gold market, putting those two markets, again, back in the alternative category for most of
Risk-off markets,
And I think that's what's shaping up. So I'm looking for arm wrestling, topping action in the stock market probably this month, where you get teasing rallies, teasing sell-offs, but, you know, a net sort of nothing. And if you get with the net sort of nothing, when you get into March, the market won't be able to sneeze, because if it does, it's going to start breaking stuff. So right now, answer is no, but we're looking for topping action.
Well, this is why you need to subscribe to Michael Oliver, because he keeps you abreast of these things on weekly and interimly between weekly reports. And I'm just looking at your last 360 weekend report, Michael, and that was January 31st, and you do have charts in there for Apple. You've got Apple, you've got Microsoft, and you've got Amazon. I guess those are some of the big boys you're talking about, right?
Those are the big guys,
Yeah, and if that breaks down, look out below, I guess, is what you're saying.
That's what we argue, and I hold with that. So we have a very narrow situation this time around. This is not a broad market top. It's going to be led by the guys who took you up here.
All right, so you got a little bit, I don't know if the right word is shaky, but, you know, I never see you as being shaky. I think that you see when there's shaky foundations or structures, you call them. But with respect to gold, you got just a teeny bit cautious a week ago, a couple of weeks ago or so. I don't think you're so worried.
About a month ago, yeah. And since then, you're right, gold's been caught between certain levels. You know, it can't collapse, but it also can't seem to get up above certain levels. It's been stuck between the high 1800s and low 1800s, still well above that November low, which is down in the 1760s. We think that gold is too aged on the downside in terms of like monthly momentum, the weekly bar action. If you look back to August, there's been a lot of downside sell-offs, most of them redundant, meaning that once you get the sell-off, you go back up again to a lower high maybe, but you recross the same ground. Then you come back down again, recrossing the same ground, and you really, if you're a bear, and you go back and look at the first sell-off low in August, let's say in silver or in gold, and say, okay, I got short then. You're not making any money.
Mm-hmm.
You've been 6-7 months now trying to sell this market down, these markets down, and you're not going anywhere. Yes, you're getting volatility, but it is not collapsing. And right now, gold is above still, right now, intra-month, today, right this minute, above the highest monthly close of 2011, the old bull market peak. So the high monthly close. So I think it's just confusion over a several quarter period. This happens at every time gold has made a new bull market peak, not a peak, but exceeded a prior major bull market peak. It has gone into a sideways, sloppy pattern for 2 to 3 quarters. Mm-hmm. And then and only then, after spooking everybody with nonsense-type action, then it explodes. In other words, you don't go up and take out an old bull market peak and explode. If you buy a new high in gold, let's say, remember the old high in 1980 was 850, okay?
Yeah, right.
Many years later, you came up and took that out. If you bought that high, a new high, you got twisted and turned for about 3/4 of a year. Sometimes up, sometimes down, but they just twisted you all over, and then did they explode to 1900.
Uh-huh. Interesting. People see a new high, and they say, well, it can't go any higher, and there's a little arm wrestling that goes on for a couple of quarters or so.
In other words, don't buy price chart breakouts. Buy momentum breakouts.
Yeah. Well, that's what you're all.
That's what we're about.
That's what you're all about. And why you're on the show all the time is because I see it working, and I don't want all these sort of impulsive in and out sort of moves. I, as an investor, that's why I appreciate what you do so much. How about the dollar now? And the T-bond. So I guess you see the T-bond strength likely when the market gets really weak.
They're poised to turn up. They've got their structures built when you look at momentum. And in other words, it's a basing action. It's clear on the momentum charts of T-bond futures that they want to go up, meaning back up in price, down in yield. Mm-hmm. They've spent, since March of last year, a heck of a long time drifting lower, if you stand back and look at it. It's no comparison to the advance in T-bond prices, the collapse in yields that occurred over the two prior years to that. So in other words, when you stand back and say, well, rates are going up, prices going down in T-bonds, it's trivial compared to the same periods of time of upside that occurred prior to that early 2020 high. Same with gold. You had this explosive move, since a year ago, actually 2 years ago, you've been going up constantly, but there was a big explosion last summer. And since then, you've really been flagging. Mm-hmm. But that flagging action, is typical for some reason, gold bulls seem to be the most nervous longs of any market I know of. stock bulls aren't so nervous and so forth and so on, but the gold bulls are always nervous.
Yeah, well, it's the counter trade, right? I have to, before we let you go, I've got to get your comments on silver. I know you've been, and maybe comment silver versus gold. I think it's obviously stronger than gold.
Silver versus gold is where to be, period.
Yeah.
Okay, we've come to that conclusion. Last summer when silver broke out by our metrics at a price of 1948, we thought within a quick period of time it would approach the upper 20s, we said. Well, it went to 29.90 in 3 weeks. The 50% gain. Since then, it's twisted and turned between up till this week, between 29 and 22, most of that action being above the midpoint of that range For instance, last Friday, silver closed, had a very strong week, closed 26.90. And that's about where it's trading right now. So it gave back its early rally this week when it traded above 30. Now, the trading above 30, if you look at a price chart, again, price charts aren't the best tools. This is a good example of that. By trading 30, you took out the high of last summer. That'd be like gold going above 2070, which had made its high last summer. It's not done it, but silver did. And then immediately backed off through $4, back down to where it closed last week. Well, buying price chart breakouts can be very dangerous because everybody in the world can see it. And as Joe Granville once said, you know, if everybody sees it, you know, something's wrong.
Yeah.
And sure enough, if you bought silver above 30, you got beat up in the last 48 hours. Now, I don't think that 30 tick was false. I think it is a positive. But it's very much lagged. It's a price indicator to what momentum has already long ago said, be long silver. And as far as the gold-silver ratio, our metrics turned up last summer when silver turned up through our momentum structures and exploded. So did the spread of silver versus gold. In fact, prior to silver making its new high this week, above last summer's high, the January close of that spread, silver versus gold, made a new high for the move, for the last few years, that is. It's just begun. The silver turn versus gold is fresh. It only goes back to last July, and it's a long-term breakout. So I think silver is the place to be for the next year or two, easily.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. So you also, you know, you've been just in general bullish on commodities, but you put out something the other day I noticed on natural gas. Would you want to comment on natural gas? And then just in general, we can wrap up with your ideas about commodities in general.
It's a ragged component, but it is positive in our view. It has its sell-offs and so forth, but it's net on balance, it's gaining ground, and it's in positive annual trend. It's not our favorite pick, but basically you can throw a dart at the commodity complex, and anything you hit with the darts is in an uptrend. We think right now, though, that what's interesting is that the monthly momentum of the S&P, and that's not long-term, but when you measure monthly versus the three-month average and you oscillate it, okay, it's an intermediate trend, looks very similar to the monthly momentum action of, for instance, crude oil, which is a key commodity, of course. And we suspect that we've had a huge surge in many commodities over the last 3 to 6 months. Oil's had a huge percent move, copper, while gold and silver have retrenched, by the way. Soybeans, corn, and wheat, they look like there's a crop disaster out there. There isn't, of course. But they've exploded. And when you look at the chart, it would be fully reasonable to see soybeans, corn, wheat, oil go into a congestion or a slight pullback over the next month or two to rest, maybe build a flag. You know what I mean? They had a huge move, and frankly, we think they could, in the process of the stock market trying to top here, also crest and pull back some. The difference being that the pullback you might see in stocks is likely to be a domino effect that keeps going, whereas any pullback we get now in commodities is a buying opportunity. But they do look to be in sync somewhat with the stock market in terms of what might happen over the next month or two. Now, gold and silver are the opposites of that. It's interesting that while commodities have been quite strong the last 2, 3, 4 months, look at a soybean chart, for example, what has gold and silver been doing? Congestion.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah. So I think what we could get here is if the stock market rolls over, we could get a pause in the commodity explosion, the Bloomberg Commodity Index, but we could get a reassertion of gold, silver, and T-bonds, the alternatives.
Very interesting.
That's kind of what we're expecting.
Well, certainly, I mean, still from a historical point of view, the commodities in general are very, very cheap, I think, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah,
off the page. So we really haven't seen much of a move. I mean,
no, we've seen the beginning statement move, you know, with the first explosion, like the beach ball has been pushed underwater and you let go of it, okay? That's just happened. Now, I think it's appropriate, wouldn't surprise me, that those people who are long commodities should prepare for congestion. Slash pullback, but not a top. This is different from stocks. It may start to behave, if stocks roll over, they may start to behave like stocks, like they'll pull back with it, but they're not going to join in. And this is also true, I think, with emerging markets. They look poised to pull back like the S&P does or the NASDAQ, but they don't have the dynamics to go down seriously. And emerging markets, of course, are a reflection of commodities.
Sure, sure. No, that's very good. Always good to have you, Michael, and it's always good to have you for a few extra minutes today as opposed to our usual time with you, and it's really great. Thank you for being with us. And
thank you, dear.
Again, it's Oliver MSA, folks, olivermsa.com. Seriously consider subscribing. If you're a serious investor, I don't think you can go wrong subscribing to Oliver, Michael Oliver's excellent work based on momentum and structure, and momentum more than the price charts. See, momentum and structure and nice, you know, most everybody looks at price charts, and Michael looks at momentum and structure, and boy, I'm a believer. That's why Michael's here as often as we can get him. Thank you so much, Michael. All right, folks, we do have to go to break now, but when we come back, Charles Hugh Smith will be with us, and he's going to have some very interesting things to say about the direction of our country and markets and a lot of the stuff that's going on now with GameStop and other things. So we'll be right back with Charles Hugh Smith. Don't go away.
Voice America is available on your Google connected device.
Okay, Google, play Turning Hard Times into Good Times podcast on iHeartRadio.
Try it today.
Great Bear Resources, trading under GBR on the TSXV and GTBAF on the OTCQX, is a gold exploration company focused on their district-scale Dixie Project in the renowned Red Lake Mining District of Ontario. Having made multiple high-grade near-surface gold discoveries, GBR's capital efficiency has allowed them to be fully funded to complete a very active 300,000-meter drill program through 2021. Stay up to date on what's been considered one of the best performing exploration stocks in the last 3 years by visiting greatbearresources.ca.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.